The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We'll decide we'll go on and just have the week trending with Michael Cogley, reporter of the Times Ireland edition, and Helen Vaughan, who is, of course, once a journalist here, but now is also a psychotherapist in her time as well. Thank you very much for joining us. But we are going to go, first of all, to our senior reporter in CFM, Juliet Gash, because today, Juliet, there was a hearing in relation, in front of an Oireachtas committee, in relation to the problems at the Lewis. And it was a remarkable development in relation to these new extra-long trams that the Lewis is introducing. Tell us about it, please.
The announcement of the preferred bidder for some Kildare commuter lines, Matt, by the National Transport Authority. And so we heard about all of that. And then I asked about the Lewis and what's going on and why have we been having so many problems and are you meeting to discuss it? What's next? And they said, yes, well, they are very concerned. We were talking to the CEO, Anne Graham, CEO of the NTA, very concerned about issues on the Lewis Green Line in recent months. We've heard huge problems, commuters at their wits' end with increased times, increased wait times, increased travel times, people saying that they could walk faster than the Lewis when it goes across the city. And Anne Graham said the main issue for them was the availability of the fleet, so essentially not having enough trams. One of the issues is that there have been works going on at the Sandyford depot, and this has an impact on the maintenance of trams. And there was also, during Storm Emma, attention was diverted to clearing of snow and lines rather than maintenance. And then she sort of dropped the bombshell after I was asking her about the longer Lewis trams. Listeners might remember that they bought, I think, 7 55-metre Lewis trams, much longer, which were also threatening to snarl up traffic. But there's a fault with those trams. So they're not being used at all. No, because there's a fault. Now, she didn't go into the detail of what the fault is.
Well, actually, can we just hear a little bit? I think we have a clip of how she responded to you.
It's expected that all of the longer trams will be in service in May, and a new timetable will be put in place once they're all tested and operating. And by May, definitely, we would see an improvement in services. But even before that, we want to make sure that we have as much of the trams out and operating on the Green Line service even before then.
And any explanation as to how this could have happened?
No, I mean, bear in mind we're in mid-March, you know, so I was sort of asking her, well, you know, are we going to see an improvement by April? And she was like, well, actually, no, we're really looking more at May. And she did say that there are daily meetings going on with Transport Infrastructure Ireland, which is the parent company. Well, you know, the overall company, there's Transdev, which operates the Lewis, and also with the Lewis manufacturer, Alston. So they're obviously banging heads and trying to find out what's wrong with these, but then they'll have to go back through testing them, because once they've fixed whatever this fault is, they then have to go through the testing. And the difficulty with these longer trams that many observers have noted is that once they're on O'Connell Bridge, they block either side of the quays. So that makes it difficult. And these are supposed to be going every 90 seconds across town. Now, you've got 100,000 people using the service, the Lewis service, daily. That is only a fraction of what Dublin Bus operates, but lots of Dublin buses have been removed from College Green to try to speed things up, and it still hasn't fixed things, and now we're still being told it's going to be May. So you'd really have to scratch your head and go, well, why couldn't these things have been ironed out before this all opened up around Christmas time?
Thank you very much, Juliet Gash. Now, Michael Cogley and Helen Vaughan with us. Michael, there's a whole list of things here that I suppose need consideration. First of all the money that was put into putting the Cross City line into service. Then the fact that when it was put into service, they didn't have the longer trams that were needed to carry the extra volumes. Then we discovered that actually the longer trams might be too long for O'Connell Bridge and cause traffic delays. And now we discover that the longer trams that are needed, that we don't have enough of them. Meanwhile, there are photos all week of people 7 deep in the morning trying to get on trams on the way into Dublin city centre. I wonder who's going to take responsibility for this.
Well, they're lucky because there's about 5 bodies involved, whereas so it seems they're all meeting at the moment. But it just does seem like a continuing stream of errors, one after the other. And I think Kevin Humphreys, the Labour senator, was speaking during the week, and he pointed out that this goes beyond teething problems. Like, fair enough, we're only 3 months in. It's not that long a period of time, but the problems themselves seem to be so severe that they seem miles off of finding the solution. A prime example is what you're saying earlier about the amount of people who are being crammed in, the photos appearing online, like there's not enough capacity. I think there's another 7 long trams being ordered at the moment. And then on top of that, the pictures that came out when the tram was stopped on O'Connell Bridge and blocking the traffic on the other side. that's mortifying. Like, that's so embarrassing from a planning perspective, from a forward-thinking perspective or whatever. It's just mind-boggling.
But now the trams don't actually work. Like, this goes to the very heart of it.
And they're expensive things to purchase as well.
And weren't they tested before they went live? Like, they were running up and down there for, I thought, a
couple
of months before.
Not the long ones, apparently, though. It was the short ones.
Oh, sorry, I didn't measure them. But I just kind of thought, surely once they launch it, they'd ironed out all the potential problems. As you say, teething problems. And here we are down the track, pardon the pun, after the launch, and they're being removed again.
Which would raise all sorts of questions about how much confidence we should have if they decide to build a metro, that the money will be spent correctly and that it'll actually work properly.
At least that's underground, so that removes some of the complicating factors, I'd imagine.
Would that not scare you even more?
Or maybe that adds more complicating factors.
I'm sure there must be people around the country listening as well. You know, there's a lot of people outside of Dublin think that resources are funneled into the Dublin region, that public transport is provided in a way that is not provided in the rest of the country, and look at this particular mess.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, it's a significant spend that's gone on, and I think the most frustrating part of it all seems to be the knock-on effect it's had on other commuters. I mean, Dublin Bus have gone mad over it. They've said that their buses have come to a crawl around the College Green area down to like 14 kilometres an hour. You can see the queues of buses backed all the way up. Cyclists have nowhere to go at College Green. It's just non-existent. And motorists as well has become very taxing for.
And how, Helen, is it going to encourage people to use public transport? I used to live on the Lewis Line. I used to find it the most comfortable way to travel, although I wasn't having to travel at the hours where everyone was crushed in like sardines. Now, apparently, it's like that all the time. I'm a bus user most days, or I walk. But if you're trying to encourage people to be environmentally friendly, why would they bother if that's the treatment they're going to get on public transport?
I have to say, I wouldn't. Like, I got the train. I lived in Malahide when I was young, got the train every day, mashed into carriages with hundreds of other people every day, morning and evening. And it just turned me off. So I now cycle. If I have to cycle 15 kilometres, 20 kilometres in a commute, that to me is preferable to being crushed into a tram or a train or a bus or whatever it is, because at least you're out getting the semi-fresh air. If you're stuck in traffic, it's not that fresh air on a bike. But I do say, as a cyclist, College Green, I don't know where to go. I don't know which lane I'm supposed to be in. Bus lane, tram. I just haven't a clue.
Of course, Shane Ross is the minister with responsibility for this. I think he's one of the two ministers who stayed in the country while everybody else is off trying to sell Ireland. Simon Harris had to stay because of the trolley crisis. But Shane Ross has been quiet enough about, after a tweet he put out last weekend about a donation or a grant that has gone to a school in his constituency. Tell us about this, please, Michael.
Yeah, so he's basically tweeted congratulating a school in South Dublin who were awarded €150,000 for their hockey pitch.
Not just any old school.
No, it's not. No, it's Wesley College, wouldn't you believe.
Which is a private school, a fee-paying school, which has got quite a lot of money coming in additionally to what it gets in the Department of Education.
Absolutely. And what makes it a small bit worse is the criteria for the funding is that it's for disadvantaged areas and disadvantaged projects and trying to get more and more people involved in sports. So it doesn't give an overall great look. And obviously people were very quick to point out that this is a fee-paying school and we're pumping more of our own public money into it. It's a fascinating thing to happen. I mean, they were turned down in the first place. They appealed and it was turned over. Now, they were one of a great deal of schools, I think 70-odd, that got their appeals turned around in January.
But yes, but Helen, there's also been lots of cases of boxing clubs and various other sporting facilities in disadvantaged areas looking for tiny amounts of money by comparison, but getting rejected.
Yeah, I can't understand why a private school is getting state money for a hockey pitch of all things. You know, it doesn't seem like it's an ultra, you know, a very necessary thing. But I think the way they pitch their application, they do it with a local hockey club, the YMCA hockey club. So they do it together so that it benefits the school students, but also a private, or not, probably not a private club, it's a public club.
Well, you still have to pay membership to be a member of the club, but it could be open to anyone who applies and pays their membership fee.
When surely your small boxing club somewhere in a far more disadvantaged area deserves, I don't know, even half that money. Like, 150 grand is a huge amount of money. And I wonder, what are they even doing to this hockey pitch? Is it AstroTurf or something like that?
It is. You should see the campus up there. It's an extraordinary campus. I say even a third level institution would be proud to actually have it. But I suppose it brings up the whole question as well. Is Shane Ross any different to all the politicians that he used to criticise when he was a journalist in the Sunday Independent? Because he would have gone on about people having their fingers in the pies, preferential treatment that ministers were able to give their constituencies. Between this and Sandyford Garda Station, It would appear, Michael, that he is as much a pork barrel local politician as anyone else.
It is ironic, given the person who it's coming from, but it's very hard to draw the line categorically and say this is the reason why it's happened, but it certainly does not look good. It doesn't give a good effect. I remember we did an analysis of the scheme at the start of the year and found that applicants from Dublin received an average grant of $61,000, which was 95% of what they asked for. And then outside of Dublin, they got 46% of what they asked for, which again doesn't make for great reading. It kind of feeds into the narrative of all the capital funding is going into Dublin and making Dublin a better place.
Well, another listener points out that there are other hockey clubs that are after getting grants. They include Three Rock Rovers in Rathfarnham, Glenan Hockey Club in Tallaght, and Loretto Beaufort in Rathfarnham, which also happens to be in Shane Ross's constituency. So there's a second school with a hockey pitch in his constituency that's got $150,000.
And is it private as well? I'm not really sure. But I just
Loretto,
don't understand.
I think it is, isn't it?
Why private schools are getting public money for sports facilities when, you know, Wesley gets about $6,000 a year per student. You know, that's huge money.
Well, that's the money that any school gets per student, isn't it? Or they
well,
get a capitation.
Is the fees.
Oh, that's the fees on top of it.
Fees of 6,250 per academic
which is designed
year.
To give them additional things on top of the normal public school
system.
The idea,
regardless of the parish pump politics element to it, you would think that this scheme should be totally off, like not available to private institutions at all. You would think like this scheme is surely for the people who are disadvantaged, who need better sporting facilities, who need better pitches, better hockey pitches, all that kind of stuff. And the idea of it being available to private schools surely just jars with the whole concept and reason for it.
Listener Bill says, surely they could have arranged the traffic signal so that the longer trams didn't have to stop on O'Connell Bridge.
Hmm. I think it's only if say a car is where it shouldn't be, like doesn't get through the lights and ends up in the middle of the road, then the tram can't get across. So if everyone does what they're supposed to, I think the tram can get through. But if someone stops in the yellow box, for example, isn't that how it works?
Possibly. Another listener says, Wesley College gets a grant of €150,000 for its hockey pitch just yesterday. Film Base in the city centre shut its doors for lack of funding. It had been a huge boost to budding writers, directors and actors, and it's now lost. And another listener confirms that Loretto Beaufort in Shane Ross's constituency is definitely a private school. Stephen Dublin says, just checked constituency map and I'm 99% sure Loretto Beaufort is not in Shane Ross's constituency. But it doesn't change the fact that it's questionable that a private school gets grants like this, though. Another one here says, Ballyfermot Youth Reach Service got €600. It's disgraceful. So €600 for Ballyfermot Youth Reach, €150,000 for the private school Wesley. Another one here says, Bridget's Boxing Club in Kildare struggling to get support and grants. The coaches who run it use their own money and transport to bring the kids to tournaments. That's the case with so many clubs, so many different clubs and different sports all over the country. And I say how envious everyone must be of the €150,000 for Wesley College in Shane Ross's own constituency. Let's talk about dogs, two dog stories which are quite bizarre, but tell us first of all, Helen, please, about this one from Belfast. A video and a man who, well, he was hunted down because of what appeared to be on his video.
So this was a guy who was out, from what he says, playing with his dog, and apparently a young girl filmed him. He was doing a game where you have kind of a ball or something where your dog bites onto it and then you sort of swing it around, and it's all about how long the dog can stay biting for. It's kind of it's a competition thing. But some young person filmed him, put it on social media and alleged that he was hanging his dog or strangling his dog. And this obviously grew legs, pardon the pun, and became popular on social media. But what I think is where it crossed the line was that the police service in Northern Ireland shared it on their Facebook page condemning it. And that's when it was like, well, did they check what this guy was doing? As it turned out, this guy saw that he was being, or I think people came to his house to try to, I don't know, do what, have a word with him about it. And, you know, he then was like, you know, I was playing a game with my dog. I'm a dog lover. There's no animal welfare issue here. And he then got in touch with the police to say, you know, you shouldn't be sharing that video. You should have checked with me first. And as it turns out, there was no animal welfare issue. And everyone's very red-faced and apologetic and, well, not apologetic enough for this guy. So this guy
but
is a
but they could have
lover.
Set the mob on him almost.
Mm. Well, apparently there was a mob coming to his house to have words with him about it. And it was only then that he realised that it had become huge on social media. He didn't even realise, I don't think, that anyone had filmed it. But it kind of points to this mob mentality on social media where people think a certain thing is happening and no one's actually checking with the person involved. Is this what's happening? Is there an issue there? And as it turned out, in this case, there wasn't.
Now, Michael, outrage in the United States where United Airlines put a bulldog puppy into the overhead storage bin where he died.
Yeah. And it's actually, funnily enough, come all the way back onto a Republican senator who actually opposed gun control but has since brought forward legislation to protect animals on planes, due, in fact, to this dog death.
Okay, and this is a most unpleasant story and terrible for the dog and for its owners. What actually happened? Are you allowed to bring dogs onto flights in America?
From what I can understand and from what the legislation that he's brought out suggests, that is the case. He, like many Americans, were outraged at the fact that the English bulldog was allowed to die on the carrier, and he was in the overhead storage bin as well, which seems really
bizarre.
They're
not supposed to be there, because I was checking, well, what are the rules? Because obviously here you can't just bring a dog on a plane and pay a bit extra, whereas over there you have to have a kennel, soft or hard, and has to be under the seat in front of you. Whereas I don't know why in this instance the dog ended up in the overhead compartment.
Apparently because the air steward insisted that it had to be done and just wouldn't let the flight take off without it, which is terrible. But the point here, though, is that this has caused outrage, and I can understand why people are upset, but far quicker to get legislation in relation to this than it would be in relation to when you have maybe 17 teenagers and adults murdered in a school because of gun laws.
The Parkland shooting was a month ago. You know, and the quick turnaround from this dog death into legislation is crazy. And at the time, it's Senator John Kennedy, by the way, who said that we needed more idiot control, or the US needed more idiot control instead of gun control at the time of the shooting, which just seems crazy. And you can understand why people got so angry. I think the main turnaround for him is that this is a win-win situation for him bringing out the dog legislation, because it whips up such an emotive issue, but somehow he's managed to make that backfire on himself because of previous comments he's made and giving the wrong, I think, amount of kudos to gun control and
importance to gun control. Dogs over people, and I would be a dog person, but I obviously think
exactly
you can't put one over the other, surely. And I wouldn't imagine that this is a major thing, that putting animals in overhead bins is a thing.
No.
And that it happened, I don't know why, in this case, but that there
actually
are rules for the airlines.
A listener following the story says the owner had actually paid $200 extra to be in beside the owner, but the aircraft staff proceeded to put it in the overhead locker.
That's horrific.
That's crazy.
But still, the issue of gun control is more important.
Slightly more important, yeah. I mean, when you look at, actually, there's good figures cited from a company called Roll Call, who said that more than 500,000 animals flew in 2017 in the US, 140 of them with United Airlines flights, and of that, 24 died. So, you know, 500,000 of 18, or 18 of 500,000 is a lot lower than the proportion of people who are dying by shootings in America at the moment. So definitely, out of choice of which to prioritise, surely gun control is higher on the agenda.
But as you say, he thought this would be popular, so yeah. Throw it through and see what happens.
Something else, going back to Shane Ross, that's his responsibility, is the commissioning of an independent review by the Air Accident Investigation Unit. It's a year on since the Rescue 116 crash off the County Mayo coast, unfortunately. Of the four victims, two have yet to be recovered. Why does it take so long to actually work out what went wrong and what needs to be done to make sure something like that doesn't happen again?
Yeah, I've written the very same thing at the top of my notes. Like, why are we waiting until now to say, okay, we will do an independent review, when that was recommended, as far as I could see it, many months ago?
You'd assume it was almost an automatic thing that should happen.
Yeah, I mean, at the time there was a lot of talk about the lack of availability of top cover in the military and why that particular aircraft was used to provide that. But it's hard to know as well. The Air Accident Investigations Unit, to be fair to them, if you ever look at a report that they compile, it's incredibly detailed. So I think this recommendation has been made off the back of one of their reports, and their reports do take an awful long time to create. Although they did do, an interim one before Christmas, a few months before Christmas, and you kind of wonder why the independent review wasn't launched then. But the one thing I couldn't believe is that it's a year on from that happening. It seems so vivid and so memorable in my eyes anyway.
Yeah, it was such a dreadful, dreadful tragedy. One other thing to finish, Hannah, of course, another tragedy that has etched in many people's minds going back to 1989 was the Hillsborough disaster, in which 96 people died. So tell us about a shirt which the Top Man store has now had to withdraw.
Well, Top Man, which is an offshoot of Topshop, kind of the male version, have put out this long sleeve T-shirt which has 96 written on the back of it, and what goes around comes around, and a white rose. And people who obviously remember the Hillsborough disaster thought, surely it's got to be linked to Hillsborough, given that's how many victims there were on that day, and the white rose, and they felt that it was very just distasteful. But Top Man are alleging that it's actually a Bob Marley song that the top was for, and that those are lyrics from the song, which is actually misquoting the song from what I could find, and that 96 is the year that song was re-released. But I don't know how this top got through. I don't know how many layers of approval before it got put out. And, you know, because it's also red and white is the other key thing, which are the Liverpool colours. So to me, as a non-football fan, I can't see how you wouldn't link this with Hillsborough. You know, 96 is the first thing you
think of. I think the design, even though it's an original design by them, it's so synonymous with that campaign and with the rights of those people who passed away and the families of those people who passed away. So the idea that it would go unrecognised, I mean, it's bizarre. Like, how many levels of checks had that got to go through? And
who would have thought of something like that that could only be interpreted like this?
Exactly. And the worst part of all is surely the wording that's included on. I mean, there's karma on one sleeve, and then there's what goes around comes around the back. I mean, it's just crazy to. And it's a you would like to think it's an unfortunate slip up for the company that somehow something like this slipped through.
Lots of comments coming in relation to facilities and grants. There's a special school for primary kids in Wexford, two properties with no playground facilities at all, nowhere to shelter from the rain. How does anyone justify that, says Alan. Also people pointing out that the number of golf clubs like Balbriggan and Malahide golf clubs got €100,000 plus each in the latest sports capital grants at the same time as Wesley College. Now obviously Balbriggan and Malahide, not Shane Ross's constituency, but golf clubs? Do golf clubs need grants?
I would have thought they're pretty well off. They have big fees as well. I know they've come down, I think, since the recession.
I think they took the hit
of the recession. They do take a bit in from members every year, as far as I know.
Yeah. We better leave it there. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining us. Michael Cogley from the Times Ireland edition and Helen Vaughan for joining us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.